Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Second Wave, First Division, discussing sadhana bhakti. Rupa Goswami, we heard yesterday about how the queens of Dwarka, they were glorifying the Brajagopis and how qualified they are to practice devotional service and how they're worshipping the topmost form of the Lord. And that even the queens of Dwarka, they're anxious or hankering to have the position or the intimacy of seva that the gopis have, because they can appreciate that their seva and their relationship with Krishna is so much more intimate than their own. And then they're mentioning, they're glorifying, they understand the position of the gopis, the mahishis, the queens, and they're saying that the gopis of Vrindavan, they've attained a position that even Lakshmi of Vaikuntha cannot attain, although she's hankering to attain. So Lakshmi Devi, she, of course, is always serving the lotus feet of Narayan and Vaikuntha, but she's had an opportunity to see Krishna's rasa dance, at least from a distance, and she became very anxious. Oh, how can I enter that dance? How can I render some service there? But desire is only part of it. There's more to attaining something besides desire. You have to have adhikar, or eligibility. You have to have qualification. So she desired, she wanted to enter the rasa dance, and she appreciated the great fortune of the gopis, but she wasn't able to manifest the bhava of the gopis. Desire was there, but she didn't have the bhava. She had mahishi bhava, or let's say, queen bhava, or whatever. Mahishi bhava. She couldn't give up her identity. I'm a Brahmani, I'm the wife of Narayan, I'm the goddess of fortune. And we discussed some classes ago. And some Puranas, there's this pastime where Yogamaya comes to Bailvan or Bilvavan in Vrindavan, and she meets Lakshmi Devi, who's sitting under the Bail tree, Bilva tree, and she's performing austerities. She says, "What are you doing here?" He says, "Oh, I'm performing austerities because I'm trying to become qualified to serve Krishna in the rasa dance, but I don't have a gopi sarup. I don't have the proper form of a gopi, or even the bhav. So I'm denied access or denied entrance to these divine exalted pastimes." So then Yogamaya says, "Well, let me do an interview." Yogamaya Ma Purnamasi said, "Let me conduct an interview and see if you're qualified." We told this story. So then Yogamaya asked Lakshmi Devi or Kamala, Lakshmi Devi, are you willing to go run behind the cows and pick up the cow, the gober? When the cows pass stool, they leave the gober. Are you willing to pick that up and then carry it in a parat, in a pan on your head, then go back to your home after you've collected 20 kilos of gober, which means cow stuff, let's say, the cow stool? And you go back to your house in Barsana or Yavit and make it into these paddies that you see everywhere in the villages." And she said, "No way, forget it. I'll never touch that stuff." What to speak of smell it. She had very nice, as I told the other day, she has very nice fingernails. And she didn't want her nail polish to get scratched off. So there's so many ways she failed the test of Purnamasi or Yogamaya. Yogamaya Ma was trying to qualify Lakshmi Devi for entrance or acceptance into the rasa dance, but she failed, and she's still there trying. Because desire is one thing, but then we also have to have the bhav behind the desire. We may desire, "Oh, I would like to serve Krishna like the gopis." That's a desire, and that's a good desire. That's certainly welcome. But then we have to have the bhav behind the desire. The gopi's bhav. What is the gopi's bhav? Gopi bhavara samritabdi lahari kalola magna mahura. Srinivasacharya glorifies the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, saying that they were immersed. Gopi bhavara samrit. Gopi bhavara sa amritab lahari. They were just immersed in the waves of this gopi bhav. Because, of course, they are gopis. They're pransakis of Radharani, they're mantris. But they know what Radharani feels, they know what she wants at any given moment, and they're prepared to serve Radharani to every extent possible, without any hesitation, without any calculation or personal consideration. So the mandris, sometimes they say the mandris, the maidservants of Radharani, there's so much identifying with Radharani, they move like her shadow. Wherever you move, your shadow moves, your chaya, your shadow. If you move your hand like this, then the shadow, if there's some lighting, proper angle of lighting, and then the shadow will also move. You cannot separate the shadow from the object, or whatever they call it, form. So the mandris, however Radharani moves, the mandris are right there. And I believe it's Vrindavan Mahimamrita, there's one verse, it's often quoted by the acharyas, that Radharani is so much, of course this is kind of leaping into Bhajan Rasyam class, but the verses here are about this. So the Vrindavan Mahimamrita, Prabhupada Saraswati is saying that the mandris are so intimate with Radharani that sometimes she says, listen, you're standing outside, pulling in that ceiling fan, but it's actually, there's no need now. There's no necessity at this time to pull on the rope of that fan. Sometimes you go in these old temples, or not even so old, but you go in some temples like Bankhi Bihari and Radhavallabh in Vrindavan. These are two very old, well, Bankhi Bihari is not a very old temple, the one that you go to now. But down the street there's a temple of Radhavallabh. And that temple is several, maybe 300 years old or more, they say. At least the original temple. And Radhavallabha temple. And the deity there of Radhavallabha is, of course, very bewitching and enchanting. It looks very magical. Have you ever been to Radhavallabha temple? His eyes are like black stone or something. And he's like half-closed eyes. You really feel like when you go there that he's some kind of Jadu Thakur. Jadu means like a magician or something. Magician means Jadu. So when you go there and you see his face of Radhavallabha, you feel like you're getting hypnotized. You look at him long enough, it seems like he's holding a watch in front of you. Dong, dong, dong. Very hypnotic darshan. Mystifying darshan. But anyway, the arrangement is there in that temple that there's some above the doorway to the Garbha Griha or the Sanctum Sanctorium where you see the deity, there is some like a pulley type wheel, and that's connected to a rope, and then that rope goes to the ceiling to another wheel which is like a pulley, and that's connected to some fan, and then it comes out to the temple and you pull the rope, and then the rope through these different wheels, and it moves this fan. Beautiful cloth fan. So the same type of arrangement they have in the kunjas of Vrindavan, but it's not cloth. Usually it's made with some type of leaves and flowers, or they may make some framework, like we do sometimes. We make designs and floral designs for the deity, so you make some base out of cloth or even fine pieces of wood. And you weave flowers there like a full bungalow. They take bamboo and they make very fine design, lattice-type designs. Then they fill them with flowers. So these fans are made like that. So the mandris, it may be cooling time. Like now it's becoming cool in the evening. So they're pulling on these fans. There's an arrangement for these type of flower fans in the kunjas of Vrindavan and the groves and the bowers. And Radha and Krishna enjoy a nice fan. Polar fan, Usha fan, these type of fans they have. Five speeds. I guess if one mandri is pulling the rope, it's one speed. And if two mandris pull the rope, it's two speeds. And if five mandris pull the rope, it's really five speeds. A very fast fan is moving very fast. So, and sometimes Radharani, she said, there's no need. Tonight there's no need for fanning. It's quite cool. There's a nice cool breeze as everyone notices it. It's becoming quite cool in the evening. And then if you stay outside the kunja, you may become a little chilled out there. So you come here and stay with me. This is told in Vrindavan Mahimamrita, one verse. Where Radharani sometimes invites her mandris to come and sleep in the flower bed with her and Krishna. And it's all right, some ladies, you know, sleep in the same bed or whatever, sisters or mother and daughter or whatever. But here it's, Krishna is also there. So this shows how shadow-like or how intimate or confident that the mantris are, that Radharani accepts them on such a level and allows them to, you know, intimately associate with her. And Krishna is so absorbed and relishing and enjoying Radharani's association and service, he doesn't even notice. And then at one point he looks on across the flower bed, and then he sees two more feet. And he knows that Radharani doesn't have 4 feet. Radharani only has 2 feet. So he says, oh, whose feet are these? Who's that? And the mantri is hiding under the covers, so to speak. And Radharani says, oh, don't worry, that's only my mantri. So then Krishna says, okay, if you're not worried, I'm not worried. Now, this is inconceivable, but it's believable because it really goes on. So in this part of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, he's using various verses from Bhagavatam to glorify the exalted position and of the Braja Gopis. And he's going to transition, I suppose, is the word. He's going to make a transition from, first he was explaining how Vaishnavas, those that worship the Lord, they don't have any interest in liberation, even if it's offered to them. They're satisfied serving the Lord. And then he gave so many verses, Prahlad, Dhruva, etc. They had, maybe some of them had ambitions or desires, but when they heard the Lord or experienced the Lord, then they gave it up and they were happy. And one verse he quoted from Bhagavatam, Prithu Maharaj is saying, I wish I had 10,000 ears to hear the glories of the Lord. And different references were given. So then he says, then he goes in to say that even if, but devotees, they're not interested in liberation, they're only interested in service. But if the Lord wants them to come to the spiritual world to do service, then they'll go. Yeah, okay. But just to go there and quote unquote hang out or enjoy being there or having the same form, Sarupya or Salokya, being in the same planet, devotees don't have any interest in that. And then he explained so many verses about the happiness they feel. And then he gave some verses. I'm just recapitulating what has been discussed over a few days. Then Rupa Goswami explained that there's all the different forms of Godhead. They're one in Siddhanta. He said, Siddhanta Abheda. He said, Abheda. There is no Abheda. There's no difference in Siddhanta between Vishnu, Ram, Krishna. But there's a difference in Ras. And when we look at Ras, we see that the form of Krishna, so we say, okay, Ram, Vishnu, Narayan, Krishna, they're all the same. They're all Vishnu Tattva. This is the Siddhanta. They're all Bhagavan. But the form of Krishna is superior to all the other forms of Bhagavan. Therefore, he's called Swayam Bhagavan. And why is the form of Krishna superior? It's because of the consideration of rasa, that Krishna has all the 5 rasas fully developed. Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, like this. So now he's, Rupa Goswami is trying to establish that this form of Krishna is the topmost. Then he explains who are the topmost devotees of the Lord. This is the progression. Well, the topmost devotees of this topmost form of Godhead, of Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, are the gopis. And then, rather than he himself just stating it, then he's quoting, well, not only am I saying this, but even one of the topmost devotees of the Lord in Vaikuntha is saying it. Lakshmi Devi is saying it. Lakshmi has a very exalted position, Kamala. She's massaging the feet of Vishnu. She's in Vaikuntha. She's the queen of Vaikuntha. And she's saying, oh, I am so enchanted and attracted by Vrindavan Krishna that I give up my post to my husband's service and I come to Bailvan to perform austerities to somehow qualify to enter the Rasa dance and render service there and have darshan of Gopinath. And so he cites even the residents of the spiritual world, even the gopis, because the gopis are in Madhurya Bhava. They have such an intimate conjugal relationship with Krishna. So then he cites someone else in the spiritual world as in Madhurya Bhava who's hankering for the position of them. And then he brings it even closer to Vrindavan by quoting verses from the Dwarka Mahishis, the queens of Dwarka, because Dwarka is much closer to Vrindavan than Vaikuntha. It's a closer petal on this lotus of the spiritual world. Then the queens are saying, oh, we went to Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse, and we saw the gopis. We heard about them from Rohini Ma. She described about Krishna's Mahabhav, his ecstasies and with the gopis, and Krishna's always calling out Radharani's name, and all these experiences that the queens of Dwarka, Rukmini and Satyabhama, they had. Understanding something, a glimmer of understanding of the gopis of Vrindavan, their mahima, their greatness, their character, their rasa, their love. And then they finally went to Kurukshetra, and then they saw, seeing is believing. During the solar eclipse, they went there, and then they saw Krishna. They're Krishna, they came with Krishna. And then they saw Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, and they saw the gopis and the gwals, the cowherd boys. And then they saw how Krishna, their Krishna, looked at the gopis, and how they looked, and what the response was, and how the gopis were so much melting with love just by a brief darshan. And then they could calculate, they could understand that the gopis' love is so much greater than ours. The intensity of their attachment to Krishna, our Krishna, but their attachment is to their Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, is so much greater than ours. And then they start offering prayers. Oh, we glorify the gopis of Vrindavan. They're so fortunate. What to speak of the gopis of Vrindavan are fortunate? Why are they fortunate? Because they get to hold the feet of Krishna on their breasts. And their breasts are decorated with kunkum, and that kunkum comes on their Krishna's feet. Because they're holding his feet on their breasts. And then he goes on to say, not only are the gopis so exalted, much more exalted than the Lakshmi Devi, but even the aborigines, even the jungle women, the gypsies, the adivasis, the aboriginal women, even they're more fortunate than Lakshmi Devi, the Palinda women, because these same feet that were held on the breast of Sri, the word is Sri, and they say, the Acharyas say Sri means Srimati Radhika, or Radharani, these same feet are walking here and there, hither and thither, on the ground of Vrindavan. And that kunkum, that red powder that Krishna picked up from the breast of Radharani, is falling off his feet onto the grass. And when the Palinda women see that, these aboriginal adivasis, they say adivasi, or we say gypsies, jungle women type, when they see that, they see Krishna in the distance, and they say, oh, he's so beautiful, he's so attractive, but we don't have any adhikar to render direct service. We don't have the proper bhav, we don't have the proper the samartha rati that the gopis have. And our bodies are not very beautiful. And Krishna is very particular. Krishna is very selective. He only takes first class gopis. I mean first class women, not like, no second class. No, I have to be very pretty. And the gopis are so beautiful. They make the goddess of fortune look like street sweeper. They say like this sometimes. A street sweeper all hunchback. This is the goddess of fortune. So these ladies, these adivasis, they think, oh, we don't have beautiful features, but he's so beautiful, he's so handsome, so dashing, daring, strong, and sweet. If there's any possible way we could render service, oh, and they feel so overwhelmed with womanly desires and wanton desires. But he's so far impossible. It's like we have this expression, old expression, a dwarf trying to catch the moon. It was impossible for them to attain Krishna. But then they look and their exasperation and their desperation. Oh, we see him, but we can't touch him. We see him, but we can't embrace him. We hear his flute, but we can't take part in his intimate leelas. What to do? It's like a child with no money staring at the window of the ice cream shop. You know, he comes to the ice cream shop, but he has no money, and he looks in the window. Oh, there's a new flavor this week. They introduced a new flavor, chocolate, peppermint, strawberry, or whatever. What is some crazy flavor? But I have no money. I can only look, and I can only imagine what it tastes like, what it smells like, what it feels like. But it's this glass is separating me, and this lack of money, this poverty is keeping me. So the Palinda women have that poverty. They have that glass, that separation. So they're looking in their desperation. Oh, is there any way we can contact that Krishna? Is there any way we can embrace Krishna? Oh, look! One woman says, look at this grass. It's covered with red powder. Ah, that's from Krishna's feet. That is Sri Dooli. That's Srimati Dooli. This is the dust from Radharani. Surely it is. Oh, we'll get the blessings of Krishna and Radharani both. And by Radharani's blessings, maybe we'll get that Gopi Bhav that Radharani has in her heart. In her heart, that love, that Mahabhav that's in her heart, and it's coming out and being picked up by this Kunkum, and that's transferred to Krishna, the bottom of Krishna's feet, and that's been dropped here on this grass. Oh, what fortune we have. So they take that Kunkum, that powder, and they rub it on their faces and their breasts, and this way they feel more satisfaction and happiness than they ever attained from the intimate embraces and association with their lawful husbands. It's told in the Bhagavatam, you know, Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. So now, Rupa Goswami is carrying his argument like this, so we can get the idea that Krishna is the greatest form of Godhead, although different forms are all one in Siddhanta, but it's in Rasa, and the gopis of Vrindavan are the greatest devotees, and they're appreciated and admired and worshipped by Uddhava, and he cites a verse by Uddhava, Asamaho Charan Reshu, Renu Jashu, Anjasam, Asam. And all these different verses. And then he starts, because the chapter is called Sadhana Bhakti. So this is all about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Although the discussion may sound like, this is very rustica. This is very rustic. This is all gopis and gopi bhav and breasts and kunkum and these things which are generally not for common discussion. But the point is that this is all a discussion before the actual beginning of Sadhana Bhakti, where he says the 64 limbs of devotion. This is called the Sambandha, the foundation, the establishing the platform to move on. Because if you want to move, you have to have some base to move from, some existence, some platform, some foundation. You can't move in the sky. Your feet have to be on solid ground. So the solid ground is called tattva, philosophical underpinning, the foundation of, well, we're going to practice these 64 limbs of bhakti. Well, why? And we're going to worship Krishna. We're going to perform Krishna bhakti. Well, why Krishna? And who performs this bhakti? So all of these points are established first before he gets into the wheres and the wherefores of practicing devotional service. Sometimes devotees, they say, oh, this is slow going. Let's get on with it. What are the rules? Let's hear the vaidhi. The vaidhi means the rules and regulations. Vaidhi sadhana means do this and don't do that. Rise early, rise in Brahma Muhurta hour, observe Mangal Arti, and clean and Nitya Kritya, clean your teeth, take a bath, tilak, and the symbols of Vishnu on the body, all these things. We're interested in those things. And of course, those are part of Vaidhi sadhana, and they must be observed. But all this is very important. So now he starts to make his transition. Therefore, he himself, he quotes this verse, he says, Shastrata shuyate bhakto nri matrasyadikarita sravadikarita maga snasya bruvatayata tristanita vishishtena hari bhaktir nipamvati. This is Rupa Goswami's own verse, and he's saying, the scriptures say, it's very interesting, this verse, because after all of these discussions and verses of Uddhava and the queens of Dwarka and the Nagapatnis and the Lakshmi Devi, you're thinking, wow, this Krishna is a really high form of God. And this Braja Bhakti, or devotional service, it seems unattainable by me. So then Rupa Goswami is anticipating that the reader, or the person who is interested in practicing bhakti, he may be feeling this inadequacy, or this personal lack, or this individual lack of qualification. Wait a minute, this book I'm reading sounds really high from the onset, and I don't think I can progress much further, because what am I? I'm just a very fallen person. And if Lakshmi's having a tough time, if Lakshmi Devi's having a tough time attaining the service of Vrindavan Krishna, what are my chances? They're slim, next to nothing, zero. So then he says, oh, I know what you're thinking. So, in his own words, he writes his verse. The scriptures say that any human being is qualified for Krishna bhakti. Oh, that's a relief. I was beginning to worry there for a minute. I mean, Lakshmi Devi can't get it, but you know, but I'm some type of human being, or at least I'm trying to be, and maybe there's still hope for me. The scriptures say, don't be unhappy. Don't be hopeless. The scriptures say that any human being is qualified for bhakti, just as everyone is qualified to take a bath in the month of Magh. He says it's Magh Snan. Like we have our Magh Mela in four places, but especially in this, what do you call it, Allahabad. And that's the month, that's January 15th to February 15th. The name of the month is called Magh, Magh Mas, and it's really cold. And the air is cold in North India, at least in North India, where this Kumbh Mela is. And the water is very cold also. If you ever had a chance to go there, it's quite, the Ganga and Jamuna is there, Saraswati is invisible. It's very, very cold. But in Padma Puran and so many Purans, they have long, long discussions. It's called the Magh Mas Mahatmyam. The glories of this month. Like we have Kartik Maina, Kartik Mas Mahatmyam. We're living, we're passing our Kartik month. Some of you, of course, are on Braj Mandal Prikrama, touring all the places of Krishna's Leelas and absorbing yourself in Leela Katha and Hari Katha and Sarasanga and Saraseva and Kirtan, and a very wonderful experience. It's a wonderful way to observe the Kartik Brat, roaming in Radharani's land, from one grove to another, from one van to another, following the footprints of Banvihari, following the footprints of Radha Banvihari. So that's Kartik Mahatmyam. But then Magh Mas Mahatmyam, the whole Mahatmyam is all about the glories of bathing. If you read about Kartik Mahatmyam, you will get one idea that will become very clear to you about Kartik this month, October to November, is that Krishna really likes light, ghee lamps, ghee, whatever it's called. And he wants you to hang one in your yard from a tree. He wants to hang one in a temple. He wants you to make a row of them. Deepavali means a series or a row. He wants you to have an Akanda Deep. He wants you to burn a ghee lamp 24 hours a day. He wants you to offer every day with an astakam, this Damodar astakam, namamishvaram. Everywhere it's taught, and it says, if anyone revives, if someone else has a ghee lamp that he has offered to some deity in some temple, and that ghee lamp has gone out or extinguished, then there's so much, Krishna's so much interested in that ghee lamp, he said, if you relight someone's ghee lamp that went out, then you get so much sukriti and so much piety and punya and religious merit and all these good things come in your side. So Krishna really wants to keep the love fires burning. And the ghee lamp is the love fire. It represents the fire of love. The ghee is the rasa. And the flame is the expression of the rasa. So one will get the idea, I should just be like a firebug. We have this term in America, you know, the fire bug. It goes and burns up woods and stuff. And the fire trucks come. So we should really just light the whole place up. You know, everywhere you look, you should light up a ghee lamp. Just carry a big, like these little ladies that run around Vrindavan with their little baskets and their little dibbas, little containers of ghee lamps, ghee wicks. And they're always offering to this people tree and to the sun and to the Shiva and Hanuman and Radha and Krishna and the lake and the tree and everywhere they're putting ghee lamps in the base of Tulsi tree. And that's what it says also. If anyone offers a kanda deep at the base of Tulsi, they get this benefit and so many things. So that's what to do. So in Magh Mas, when you read Magh Mas Mahatmyam, which this verse is telling about, that the eligibility, as anyone can take a bath in Magh Mas, January, February, anyone can take up bhakti. If you have a human body, you're eligible. So in Magh Mas Mahatmyam, it talks all about bathing. It's a month to take a bath. And so it's like 30 pages of Magh Mas Mahatmyam in Padma Puran. It's all about bathing, 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 bathing. By the time you get finished reading it, you feel like you're drowning. It says, anyone who bathes at sunrise, anyone who bathes before sunrise, anyone who bathes at Brahma Muhurta, anyone who bathes in a nadi, a sacred river, anyone who bathes in a well, anyone who bathes outside of his house. It says if you can't bathe in a sacred river or a holy tank or Radhakund, Shamakund, whatever, Yamuna, and you're stuck somewhere in some material type place, city, then you should at least put a bucket of water outside overnight and bathe outside of your house in that water. It says anyone who bathes in a bucket of water outside their house in the month of Magh, he goes to Vaikuntha. If he does it every day, of course, probably one of those days you'll probably freeze to death. And then while you're freezing to death, you may say Narayan, and then you go to Vaikuntha. But this is a joke. But the idea is that it's not too easy to do, and we've tried to observe that sometimes. It's a good experience. You really find out whether you're alive or not. Sometimes we take our life force for granted. We're just living. We eat, sleep, we live, and try to do some devotion, service, and we're not really cognizant or aware that we actually have something called prana or life force. when you go in this water, it's freezing cold. It's like New Vrindavan, right? They used to chip away the ice, and they know all about this life force and. That's how come the New Vrindavan devotees became so exalted and so advanced, because unknowingly they were taking Mag Snan for 20 years. They were out breaking the ice. They were breaking the ice in some lake or some whatever, swimming hole or whatever. They get this water and they take a bath, and it's freezing cold and it's January and it's magmas. So this is called Agyata Sukriti. Agyata, they didn't know, but you get the benefit. Like someone may go and put money in my bank. He catches my bank. Usually it's the other way around. They take it out. But if he catches my bank number and he says, oh, I have so much money, I think I'll randomly put in this bank account. So he puts and puts and puts. Then one day I go, oh, what's my balance? Oh, 10 lakhs. Oh, 10 lakhs? I had 5 rupees. So how I got so much? And then he says, oh, I don't know. Someone's been putting money inside. Okay. I didn't know who that was, but I reaped the benefit. I'm happy for that. So this is called Agyata Sukriti. Unknowingly, you're doing something wonderful, and then the benefit is being registered in your Sukriti, your pious account, and you will get the results in next life, and usually in next life, and often in this life. Just like our Chokidar, he can't read or write, but it is his habit to take bath every day at 6 o'clock in the Nal, in this Nal, with a hand pump, which is outside the house. And many times it's magmas, because he does every day. And he's, oh, I don't know anything, I just know my boat. It's like the scholar and the boatman, you know. And he's real simple. I just think, oh, Haribo, Haribo, takes his snan. And here it's magmas. It's 2 hours, an hour before sunrise, and it's outside the house. So he gets all this unbelievable benefit. If I read it to him, he says, you will become the king of the world, you will get liberation. You know, he says, really, really, me? Well, just by taking a bath? I've been doing this for 30 years. I never thought about it. So this is the amazing thing about magmas. So now Vishishta Muni, this is Rupa Goswami saying. He's saying anyone's qualified for bhakti, then somehow he says Vishishta, while speaking to the king, apparently there's some reference here, it's not given. Vishishta Muni, while speaking to the king, maybe Dasharath, has given that example concerning devotion of the Lord. Apparently there was some discussion between Vishishta Muni or Vishishta Rishi and some king, which is not mentioned here, about devotion, about bhakti. What is the eligibility or the adhikar for bhakti? And in that discussion, Vishishta Muni said to the king, anybody can practice bhakti. You don't have to be Lakshmi Devi or somebody very special. Jiva Goswami gives a commentary. From what has been previously said, it should be concluded that those who possess faith and are devoid of desires for material enjoyment and liberation are qualified for pure bhakti. This is certainly applicable to the three upper castes without distinction. But what about others? This verse says that all persons are eligible. This is indicated by the introductory words, kim cha. So this is maybe some technical phraseology. But in this discussion, they were saying that, oh, the devotion is only available for someone who's very intelligent. And bhakti, there's some verse about the Atmaramas Jamunio, Nigranta, that it says that those that are Atmaram Munis, that are already liberated and realizing this Brahman, they, by dint of their austerity and their study, they come to some, by some mercy, they realize that actually bhakti is highest thing, and they take up bhakti. So it seems that only Brahmins or very high-class people can take to bhakti. Very qualified, intelligent, renounced. And then Jiva Goswami is saying here, by this verse, Rupa Goswami is saying, no, any human being. Any human being means man, woman, child, young, old, any varna, shudra, American, French, Russian, anyone can take. There's no bar, there's no limit. So now, then there's just one line from Padma Puran. It says, Yata Padme Puran, Sarve Dikarino Yatra Hari Bhakto Yata Nripa. Because this is a general line of presentation in Shastra. If someone is compiling or writing a Shastra, they may state their own viewpoint, or their own, not just their opinion, but their realized viewpoint, being if they're Mahajans and qualified representatives of the Lord, due to their dint of their purity and realization, they're writing some scripture, like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Rupa Goswami, he's making statements in his own words, of course in Sanskrit. And then that should be enough, because for us, he's a Mahajan, Acharya. He's our guru, Rupa Raghunathapadi, Hoive Akuti. We're eager to follow his teachings and his books. Whatever he says is gospel for us. But even he doesn't feel that he's free from scrutiny, or that he can get away with saying whatever he wants. Well, I'm Rupa Goswami, I said it. But he's saying, no, okay, I'm telling you this, and anyone's qualified. But not only that, the Shastras are telling. So he always cites the Praman, the evidence, Shastra Praman, the evidence, the proof, the support. He backs up what he says, puts his money where his mouth is, as they say. Put your money, people say so many things, oh, I have so much money, I'll do this. Okay, give me some money. Oh, I don't have any money. So he's saying, no, Padma Puran, I'm saying, and someone might say, oh, you're Rupa Goswami, who are you? Oh, no, Padma Puran is saying, the Shrutis are saying, the Smritis are saying, oh, the Shrutis, the Smritis, all the great Vedic Rishis, the realized souls, the avatars are speaking, or the great sages, oh, then I must surely pay attention or consider this as something very important and tantamount to my own life and experience. So that verse is, all are qualified for Hari Bhakti, O King. Again, this whoever this mysterious king is. And then he quotes another scripture called Kashi Kanda. Antyaja apitad drashtre shanka chakranka dharina samprapya vaishnavam diksham dikshita iva sambhavu. In that country, the outcasts means they're beyond the varna. There are four varnas and four ashramas, and if one is not in any of those, he's out of the caste. He's cast out. It's interesting, we have this phrase in English. Oh, he got cast out of the society, or cast the Christians to the lions. So they cast out. So this outcast means he's outside the classification of Varnashrama, Varnashram system. Because of his behavior, because of his activity, because of the degree of his faith or his barbaric nature, he may not be considered even in the human platform. But it's saying here, in that country, there are some outcasts. They received Vaishnava initiation, and they're wearing the marks of conch and disc. And when they appear, they look like sacrificial priests. So, samprapya vaishnavam diksham, dikshita sambhavu. That when they acquired samprapya, when they acquired the symbols of a Vaishnava, because in Sri Vaishnavism, or in the traditional Vaishnavism of South India, or Narayan, worshippers of Narayan or Vishnu, when one gets indoctrinated into the sect, or what we call in Christianity, they say baptized or accepted, then he has to wear the marks. We wear Urdhva Pandra, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. The markings, the Vaishnava symbols are very simple. And you can, and one day you can be a Vaishnava, the next day you can not be a Vaishnava. Because you just put on a tilak with clay, and if you change your mind tomorrow, well, wipe it off. Like if the Muslims attack, if the Muslims start taking over India, then you just wash off your tilak and grow your beard and shave your mustache. Or what was it? Well, they shave their mustache? What is it? Muslims have no mustache or something? Is it right? They just have this, right? So you grow your beard and shave your mustache and say, hey, Allah Akbar, man, Allah Akbar. And the guy says, wait a minute, weren't you a Hare Krishna a few years ago? Weren't you some kind of sannyasi? Oh, no, that was my brother. My twin brother. Not me, I'm Pukka Muslim. So you can wash away your religion. You can wash away Gaudiya Vaishnavism, just a little water. Or a sweaty kirtan, when you have these ecstatic kirtans, Vishnujan or some devotee, everything just flies off. Isn't it? So, but in Sri Vaishnavism or traditional Vaishnavism, you become a marked man. And this phrase, a marked man, you are marked, you are tattooed. You know, you see nowadays, they have these tattoos are quite popular with men and, of course, even women. And you're branded, like they do with cattle in the West, in Wyoming and whatnot. Some mark. So when you go and you want to join the Vaishnava faith and become a Vaishnava, card-carrying member of Vaishnava, you have to have, on your shoulders, you have to have, they take a brass branding iron, basically, and they heat it up in the fire. It's a special fire, irony wood or something. There's a yagya, all kinds of rituals. And they heat it up, and you stand there, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. Or you say, Vishnu, 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 or something. And they burn the mark into your arm. One side shank, and the other side is, disc. This conch and the chakra. Conch and chakra. So this the chakra is for protecting. The chakra is for protecting the Vaishnava. Just like Durvasa Muni, he was chased by Vishnu's chakra because he offended the Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj. So the chakra is on one side to protect, and to dispel the demons and demoniac forces. And then on the other arm is the conch. And conch represents fortune. It represents fortune and wealth and all the good things that come to the children of God. So when one surrenders takes shelter of the Achyuta Gotra, or the infallible family of God, or Vishnu's family, then he becomes victorious. Because the conch represents the sound of victory. When Krishna was on the battlefield, and then the Pandavas, they have their, what's it called? Panchajanya. Krishna's conch shell is called Panchajanya. And when they resounded their conch shells, that spelled defeat for that sound, that vibration, which was considered transcendental, because everything connected with Krishna, Tadinam Samarchanam, is transcendental. So that sound of that conch shell spelled defeat for the Kauravas, Duryodhan and Dushashan and Shakuni, etc., Dhritarashtra. So this conch shell means Vijay. Brahm Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. That this conch shell, this devotee, he'll be protected and he'll be victorious and he'll be all fortunate. So this is a heavy price to pay when you become Vaishnava, because these marks can't be washed off in the water. They're there for good. So the Muslims take over and they say, take off your shirt. No, I'm a little cold today. You know, it's really a cold day. I don't want to take off my shirt. No, I think you're a Hindu. No, I'm really not Hindu. See, I grew my beard. I'm a Muslim. And they said, no, take off your shirt. Kafir. Infidel. Hindu. Cut his head off. So, so this is the thing. So they did like that also. So there's this, we're saying that the outcasts in this one country, the outcasts, or they didn't have any position in the society. Now they've taken Vaishnava diksha. They have the symbols. They have the conch shell and the chakra on their arms. Now they look like sacrificial priests. They look like Purohits, Jajamans. They look, not Jajamans, but Purohits. And they look so exalted. And it was interesting, this verse, it almost reminds me of Srila Prabhupada when he was so much appreciative, because Prabhupada had so much love for his disciples and so much appreciating their efforts and contribution and cooperation with him. And he would see them, he'd say, oh, look at my disciples with Sari and Tilak and Dodi and Tilak and Choti, this Srika. He says, they look so bright, they look like Vaikuntha men. They look like they just come from Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha men and Vaikuntha ladies. This is Prabhupada's pride, family pride, pride in his children. And certainly his children were something to be proud of, because they did so much wonderful service under his inspiration and blessings. And he was proud. This is love. And so, Vaikuntha, man, I mean, hooray. We talk about outcasts. Let's say in this country, the outcasts, once they receive the symbols of Vishnu, by taking Vaishnava Diksha, then they became more glorious and effulgent and attractive than sacrificial priests. They went from outcasts to Brahmins. Brahmins are the crown of the society. Brahmins on the top. Right? Brahmin, then Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, then Chandala. Even Chandala is like in a caste, and an outcast is like below that. So Prabhupada, by his mercy, he collected the outcasts of the outcasts, the downcast. There's also a word like this in English. There's the outcast. So he collected the downcast, the most down, the downest, and that has a lot of meanings also. The Prabhupada collected the downest of the down class, downest of the downcast, and he uplifted them to the topmost class and made them Brahmins. And he said, this is in fact the purpose of the ISKCON movement, is to create a class of Brahmins and Brahmanis, to spread these pure teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Prem Dharma, through the chanting of the holy name and the worshipping the deity and the preaching and book distribution and the display of love and action. Love and action is pure behavior. When we joined the temple, we saw love and action, the pure behavior between the pure devotees, the pure ladies and gentlemen, serving together, Radha Vrindavan Chandra, Radha Govinda, Rukmini Dwarkadish. So much love, so much camaraderie, so much sharing, cooperation, understanding. This is Prem Dharma. So Prabhupada, he took these. So we have washable marks, washable Vaishnav marks. We can wash away our tilak. But some people, they only get a good suntan. If they're white, you know, they have white skin, and then they have tilak, and they get a suntan, and the tilak comes off, then there's a white tilak on their forehead. Looks quite nice. Quite a nice thing. So this is being told here. So Jiva Goswami, he says, in the Kashi Kanda it is said that all men are qualified for bhakti, and the meaning is, in that sense, only, whatever. Dikshita means a person performing a sacrifice. Sometimes it's not clear to me. I need a commentary on Jiva Goswami's commentary. But basically saying that all men, the point we want to understand is everyone's qualified for bhakti, and then we'll continue on that point tomorrow.